Hello, I'm Bruce Celery. This is Moolala, Money Made Simple, life insurance. If you have dependents, you have got to have life insurance, but it isn't cheap. Laura McKay from Policy Me is here to talk about how to make life insurance more affordable. And sticking to the theme of insurance, if you've been to the airport recently or ever, you know how big a pain it is if you were to lose your luggage or even for it to be delayed by the airline. Some credit card companies offer a particular type of insurance to help compensate you and, find a new set of clothes on your destination. Natasha McMillan from RateHub.ca is here to talk about how all that works. Then the word mortgage can be a real trigger for homeowners these days, given how much interest rates have increased. There's a new player on the market. Pine is a mortgage company that lets you go through the mortgage process online. Its co-founder, Justin Herlick, will be here to talk about how Pine works and how it compares to many of the other lenders out there, including the big five banks. Plus, the debt-free guys, David Auten and John Schneider, paid off $51,000 in debt in under 3 years. They're going to take us through the steps of how they did it and share some tips to help you live, as they say, fabulous lives without sacrificing financial security. And all you need to know about income splitting. Jason Heath from Objective Financial Partners will be here. This is Moolala, Money Made Simple, brought to you in part by Credit Canada, the first and longest standing nonprofit credit counseling agency in the country, and by Home Equity Bank, provider of the CHIP reverse mortgage. Let's get started. A mortgage is the biggest loan most of us will ever take on. Of course it is. It will cost hundreds, maybe hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars in interest, and we will carry one for decades. Needless to say, you don't want to mess it up. My next guest co-founded a company that aims to make things a little bit easier for consumers. Justin Herlick is the co-founder of Pine, which is a company that lets you secure your mortgage entirely online. Hello there, Justin.
Hi there. How are you doing?
I both love talking about companies that claim to want to disrupt the category and take on the big banks. I love to have these conversations, and I've been around for a while. So I've seen a lot of them launch and, you know, either stumble or get bought out or just be capped at a market share that hasn't made much of a dent. Why did you decide to launch Pine?
Yeah. So the reason I started this, and thanks for having me on, really appreciate it. The reason that I started Pine comes from my background, really growing up in Canada, but working in the United States. So I grew up here, originally thought I was going to go into a career in finance, moved to the United States, actually, instead of doing that, and started a career in technology. And I was at a pretty influential company called Blend, which was and continues to be a mortgage technology platform in the US. And what they did was they built a software that allowed all the major lenders in the United States to start offering a mortgage experience online. So Blend works with companies like Wells Fargo, US Bank, BMO Harris. And really what was happening in the US about 5 years ago was companies like Rocket Mortgage came out and they started competing with the traditional banks. And they started doing things online, being a lot more customer focused and a lot more kind of streamlined. And the traditional players, the banks, they said, well, we really need a way to compete. We don't have the tech resources internally to build these types of online experiences. Let's partner with a vendor technology. And Blend was fortunate to be one of those technologies that really did take off, getting a lot of market share. And I was with them during that period of growth. And one of the things that I got to do while at Blend was explore the opportunity of bringing that product offering to Canada. So being from Canada, this was an idea that I was really passionate about. And I said, hey, this platform is working really well in the US. We're getting all this market share. All these US lenders are using us. Let's see if we can get it in Canada. So went to Canada on behalf of Blend and talked to pretty much all the major lenders, all the big banks. And we actually did do a pilot program with one of the large non-bank lenders. In doing that, we showed that the product worked. We made all the modifications and we had a proof point. Plus we had all this, you know, traction in the US. I talked to all the major lenders here. And I said, hey, look, we're ready to do this. And the reception I got was honestly, it was really like lukewarm. They were like, well, you know, this might not be the right time for us to invest, or we have something going on internally. We're going to make our process more online. Not a lot of traction. So I said, okay, you know what? If I have this amazing tool that's working and I can't get people to use it, I'm just going to go straight to the problem myself, and I'm going to create a mortgage company and offer directly to the consumer the experience that I think they deserve. And that's really the whole story behind Pine, because I've seen how much fintech products people have in the US and in other countries living there. And when I moved back to Canada in the middle of COVID, I was like, this is ridiculous. We should be able to have at least the same product offering that Americans
right.
do.
You're like, do I live in Little House on the Prairie? Is this actually pioneer days over here? And certainly the big banks have invested buckets of money in fintech, but it is an oligopoly in which we just don't have the competitive context that other smaller players can get a toehold in the way as they can in other markets. So I understand it's very easy to compare rates online. That's been around for a very long time. How do you then, with a mortgage, provide an online experience that helps a consumer assess features? Because I work with a broker. He has been incredibly helpful in talking me through all the features out there. Rate's one thing. It's very easy to find out the best possible rate. But thinking through the payment vacation and the lump sum privileges and fixed versus variable and all those sorts of things, it's helpful to have a conversation about that.
Yeah, it really is. So in terms of rate, while it might seem pretty easy to compare rates online, when you actually get into it, what you realize is different lending institutions have different patterns. So the banks, for example, the rates that you typically see on their website, there is a better rate that they could offer to you if you go in and you talk to someone. But that's not the approach that we take at Pine. At Pine, we give you the best rate upfront. There's no negotiating with us. We tell you what we can do. And then in terms of explaining product offerings, we do have the breadth of product offerings as well. So we have fixed, we have variable, we have insured, we have uninsured. And those are kind of the main decisions that you have to make as a consumer. Do you want that mortgage default insurance or do you not? And you don't have to have it by kind of regulation. So while there are a number of features, the vast majority of people get one of kind of a few products. And then it just becomes, how can you deliver a service and explain that to the customer really seamlessly? And that's really our differentiation. If you look at our product offering and you get a mortgage with us, and I hope you know you and your listeners get a mortgage with us, what we're doing is not a crazy new mortgage. We're not, you know, taking people from different credit scores that aren't like the kind of acceptable range for the products that we offer. And what we're doing is we're just trying to make it as streamlined and as customer focused so people can get on with their life because everyone's really busy. So we built the technology to allow people to do things on their time, but we don't believe that people are just coming to us because we have a technology and an experience.
I get a lot of questions, as you can imagine. And I got a question from a listener saying, okay, what do? I have a variable rate mortgage. It was $3,100 a month. It has risen in the last, since April 2021, to $4,400 a month because, hello, rates have risen. Her lender, her broker, whoever it was that was talking her through these different scenarios, should have had a very forthright conversation with her about how much that variable payment could rise to. What would have happened if she had been with Pine?
So with Pine, our licensed mortgage agents on the team give the appropriate advice for that customer. So we're not really here to recommend a fixed or a variable. It's really understanding the pros and cons of these different products and how they affect you, because everyone's personal situation is different. Everyone has different cash flow needs. And our great team of agents are here to help them and walk them through that. So it is really important to understand the customer situation. And again, what's really difficult is the interest rate environment out there. And like I said, I originally started my career in finance, particularly in the interest rate capital markets. Looking out there, nobody knows. People have predictions, but nobody knows where the interest rates will be. And even the Bank of Canada is taking in all the data that they get daily to make these decisions, right? So we would explain to the customer, hey, here's the implications. These are things that could happen to your mortgage if you take this product. And here are things that could happen if you take this other product. So we really try to fit it to that customer's needs.
You mentioned your brokers or your specialists, or I can't remember the phrase that you used. So this is entirely online, but I can also talk to a human?
Yeah. So online is to meet the customer with convenience. We know, and I've seen this from, so like I said, I worked at a platform company in the US and we provided an online experience to about roughly one third of US mortgage lenders. Nobody wants to do 100% of their mortgage without talking to a person. Just going back to that intro that you gave, this is the largest financial transaction of someone's life. They are not going to trust themselves to guide themselves through that. So we use the technology to allow them to do all the steps online. You could, in theory, do it all online. but people really do want to talk to someone. So we have mortgage agents that provide that, and they're there to assist that customer. We're not very pushy. We try to make sure that we're providing the appropriate advice to that customer and get them through the process. And people need heads up, right? Even on like simple things like coordinating dates where you're closing, there's a lot of parties involved. There's a closing agent, there's the lender, there's your realtor, there's the seller. There's a lot of the coordination. So we do have a team that helps customers through that to make it as easy as possible for them.
The legacy players still require in-person signatures. And I can't tell if that's just to get you into a branch so they can sell you a credit card. I don't know. Are you able to do this entirely through some sort of, you know, virtual DocuSign? Do you have to have a Zoom meeting to authorize the documents? How does that work?
So it depends which documents we're talking about, and it depends on which province you're in. We offer kind of a range of solutions, but most customers choose an at-home signing where one of our partners, they go to that customer and they do a combination of electronic and wet signatures where necessary, but they bring it to the customer's house. So it makes it a lot easier for them. And there's no branch visits at all with Pine.
The 5 to 10 year path for Pine. And I know you're going to say we're going to grow and you're going to say all this mom and apple pie stuff. But what I have seen for a lot of these fintech upstarts is really the exit and the exponential growth happens upon acquisition.
Yeah. So what I want Pine to be is an incredibly recognized brand in Canada. We're really passionate about being Canada specific. And a lot of investors say, well, are you going to go to the US? I'm like, no, we're focused on Canada. And when people think of real estate transactions, I want them to think of Pine, whether that's getting a mortgage, getting a HELOC, tapping into home equity or even looking to buy a house. These are all things that we could get into, our home insurance. And once I think we establish ourselves as a really credible player in the primary mortgage financing, then we can start offering additional lines out. But right now we're just in Ontario and BC, and we have a lot of ways to go just in the short term. It's really hard, to think 5 to 10 years in startup world where it's like, well, I don't know. Maybe we're a crypto company in 5 to 10 years.
It would seem to be your business was a lot easier to run a year ago when the housing market was on fire. There was a lot of transaction volume and things were headed in one direction. Now it seems like it's going to be a lot harder with interest rates rising and valuations being unclear in terms of what a home is really worth and therefore how much you would qualify for. What keeps you up at night in terms of the current dynamic in the market?
So what keeps me up at night is probably not what you think, but it's really just the stress on our customers, because having interest rates change every day, mortgage rates are very volatile right now, and having interest rate payments go up due to prime rate announcements really affects our customers. And that's what I worry about. I'm not too worried about us. We just got started. So whether there's 750 billion mortgages a year, or there's only 500 billion mortgages a year to us, hey, we're just getting started here. We have a lot of room to grow. But really it does create a stressful environment for customers. And we're here to provide them with that advice and that kind of whole handholding experience if they need it to walk them through all these steps. That's what I get really worried about.
Interesting. Justin, thanks for your time today.
Yeah, thank you.
Justin Hrlik is the co-founder of Pine. He says, we want to be Canadian. And with a name like Pine, that's practically like Maple Leaf or Poutine or Celine Dion. I think you're good. You've got your Canadian identity is firmly entrenched.
Thank you.
You're listening to Moolah Law, Money Made Simple, with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
Two individuals in a couple can make vastly different amounts of money at work. And if one makes, say, $125,000 and the other makes $25,000, as a pair, they're going to pay more tax than if each made $75,000. And that's true in retirement, too, if those incomes are disparate. Hence, the opportunity of income splitting. What is it? How does it work? What are the different ways you can do it? Jason Heath is the managing director of Objective Financial Partners, a fee-only, advice-only financial planning firm. And he joins us now to talk about how that works. Hello there.
Hey, Bruce. Thanks for having me.
In a sentence, how do you describe what income splitting is and whether or not it's legal?
Yeah. So income splitting is legally moving income from one individual to another. It's a lot easier in some other countries where people file joint tax returns and a couple can combine their income. But here in Canada, we report our own income. And as you mentioned, you can have a big disparity in tax rates. If you can split income, you can save tax.
Give me some other examples of scenarios in which this is something that's really worth people focusing on. So I mentioned just simply salary disparity. What else would you say would have you, as you talk to clients, like you should actually think about this?
Yeah. I mean, salary disparity, I mean, that's a good one. The example you gave, $125,000 of income, someone might be paying 45% tax on their last dollar earned versus a $25,000 income spouse might only be paying 20% tax. So to the extent you can move income to lower income spouse, it can be advantageous. Some of the easier ways to do it while you're still working are if you are self-employed. If you're self-employed, you can pay a family member a tax deductible salary as long as it's legitimate. They're actually doing the work. You can't just, you know, pay them a big salary for doing nothing. So business owners always have the easiest opportunity. Business owners as well have the advantage of adding a new taxpayer into the mix. If you can set up a corporation and leave some of your income in that corporation, you can pay a low rate of corporate tax on the income and have a third person within the couple, so to speak, to split income with. Not everyone can do it, but a high income earner who doesn't need all their income has a real corporate advantage.
I understand the principle around ensuring that the spouse is doing something of value for that business. What's the CRA test of that?
So there's really three sort of conditions for a salary to a family member to be tax deductible. It needs to actually be paid to them. It needs to be paid just the same way you pay a third party. The work must be necessary for earning the business income, not just some made up role. And it needs to be reasonable given the work they're doing and even their age. And age would really apply to a child. You can employ your child, but to put a five-year-old to work doing something for your business would have to be in line with what you would pay any other five-year-old, which would probably be nothing. So those are the main conditions. It gets a little more complicated when you get into paying dividends, for example, to a spouse or child who owns shares in your business. The rules changed a few years ago to make it complicated to do so. And normally you'd need to have a family member working at least 20 hours a week in the business to be able to pay them dividends as a shareholder. But lots of complexity. Talk to your accountant if you have corporate income splitting opportunities, because there's some good stuff there for sure.
Spousal loans are also an option. The rate of interest is mandated at 2%, but it's going up to 3%. How does that method work?
So if you have somebody who has a lot of non-registered investments, taxable investments outside your RSP, outside your TFSA, you can't just give that money to your lower income spouse to invest. You can loan it to your spouse at the CRA prescribed interest rate. As you mentioned, currently 2%. It's going up to 3%. And at 3%, it may not be as advantageous. But basically, if you lend $100,000, just to use a simple number, to your spouse at 3%, and they can invest the money and earn a 5% return, that incremental 2% profit can go on the lower income spouse's tax return legitimately. The interest needs to be paid by the lower income spouse back to the higher income spouse, and it needs to be done legitimately. But that is a way that you can move non-registered taxable investment income onto our lower income spouse's tax return.
Seems like a much smaller idea than the idea of paying them a salary if you run a business.
For sure. And frankly, the example of $100,000 was really just to use a simple number. Often you need to have hundreds of thousands of dollars and arguably more to make it really advantageous and a big difference in tax rates. So for a lot of sort of average people, the better income splitting opportunities, I think, are not so much income splitting in a traditional sense, but more income planning, I suppose, you know, making RSP deductions in the name of the higher income spouse, where you're getting a bigger tax refund for that contribution. And in retirement, it gets a lot easier to split income with a lower income spouse and ideally equalize your incomes completely.
Right. I mean, in pre-retirement, that sort of says if you've got two incomes, let's be sure that the higher income person is doing everything they can to reduce that taxable income. Yeah. Yeah. Tell us a bit more about the spousal RRSP.
So a spousal RRSP used to be really, really popular until about 15 years ago. It still has its place, and I'll explain why. So a spousal RRSP is an RRSP that a higher income spouse can contribute to based on their RRSP room. They claim the tax deduction on their tax return. However, the account belongs to the lower income spouse, and they're the one in retirement who can take withdrawals from that account and have it taxed on their tax return. Back in 2007, there was a new piece of legislation that was introduced called pension income splitting. And it's a way that some retirees can equalize their incomes, including moving RIF withdrawals. And our RIF is what you convert an RRSP into in retirement. You can move RIF withdrawals over to your lower income spouse. So because this pension income splitting makes it easier to split income, spousal RRSPs still have a place, but they're now not the only option to split income in retirement for seniors.
When do you need to be thinking about this? I mean, I'm sure you're going to say something cliche like now, or it's never too late or something, but yesterday, but ideally, when should you be thinking about this?
Hey, look, I think people should always be looking at how to optimize their finances. You know, when you're making RRSP contributions, if you have a pension plan at work, if you have extra money and you're trying to decide whether to save or pay down debt, now is always the best time to be looking at what you can do. If you've missed opportunities in the past, so be it. You can't do anything about that. But any way that you can pay less tax, especially now when the cost of living isn't high and inflation, and you know, how can you keep more of what you earn and spend less? I mean, look, tax is an expense. And if you can spend less on tax, you've got more to spend on expensive stuff at the grocery store.
What are some of the pitfalls of income splitting? What do people do wrong?
Well, you know, sometimes people will try to achieve a tax outcome that maybe isn't in line with their, you know, overall personal financial objectives or their investment strategy, for example. So I'd never let tax dictate your decision making primarily. I think it should be a secondary thing. Oftentimes people make mistakes, as I alluded to previously, with businesses, you know, paying their spouse in the wrong way or their child. These new tax on split income rules for business owners and family shareholders, people can certainly make mistakes there. I think the best thing that somebody can do, even if you do your own taxes, do a little bit of research, maybe even do a consultation with an accountant or somebody who's got good tax planning experience in order to understand if you're doing everything that you can be doing. Even if you go back to doing your own tax returns thereafter, getting some advice from a professional or doing your due diligence can help you pay less tax as a family.
We talk so much about saving for retirement and so little about what happens once you are retired in the decumulation phase. Thanks for planting some seeds for us, Jason. We appreciate it.
No problem. So much time that people spend accumulating their assets, decumulation. There's a lot of, you know, there's not enough attention, I think, that is paid to that. So, you know, really important way to have more to spend in retirement if you can pay less tax and figure out how best to split your income.
100%. Jason Heath, Managing Director of Objective Financial Partners. Thank you. Thank you very much. Coming up next on Moolala, how the debt-free guys paid off $51,000 in debt in under 3 years. And later, has your luggage been delayed? It has been so frequent for so many travelers recently. Your credit card might have you covered on that front. Natasha McMillan from RateHub.ca will be here to talk about credit card delayed baggage insurance. If you have been delayed on listening to an episode of Moolala, it is very simple for you to get caught up. You can go to moolala.ca and you can search for episodes by guest name, by topic. You can listen to the full thing. You can also go to all the different podcast platforms, Spotify, Stitcher, Amazon Prime, wherever, and download the full show, write a review, maybe even subscribe to the next episode so it will arrive right on your device.
You're listening to Moolah La, Money Made Simple with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
Welcome back. Moolah La, Money Made Simple is brought to you in part by Credit Canada. I am the CEO of the organization, and we are Canada's longest standing nonprofit credit counseling agency. Our mission is to help people get out of debt so they can get back into life. Listen, debt is a brutal reality for millions of Canadians. It starts to pile on for lots and lots of different reasons: job loss, divorce, illness, bad luck, you name it. Our accredited credit counselors are available to help you understand your current financial situation and take you through all your options on how to move forward. And there really are options out there. So go to creditcanada.com. We are nonprofit. As I said, the counseling is free and judgment free. Getting out of debt is no easy feat, especially when the number is like $51,000. David Otten and John Schneider are two husbands now living their, quote, fabulous lives. Fabulous, and they use it a lot. They used a seven-step system to help them pay off their debt in under 3 years, which is a pretty big deal. Now they've created this this website, this podcast called Debt Free Guys, and their mission is to help other gay men and probably LGBTQ people in general, I don't know, get a handle on their financial life too. They join us now from Philadelphia to talk about how they did it. Gentlemen, hello.
Hello. Hello there. Thank you for having us.
Definitely. Okay. How many stereotypes did you deliver on pre the launch of your debt destruction plan? Like, how gay were you exactly?
This is John. That's a very good question. I think,
were you white party? Were you like flitting around? Did you over decorate every room in your house?
Yes. I over-decorated every room in my house. I thought upon graduation, my responsibility to live up to the expectation of a gay man was to pottery barn every room of my house.
Oh, yes. Well, that is, I mean, that's in the code.
You, of course, this was late 90s. So that might've changed by now. And then we weren't like white party, pink party, all that kind of stuff, but we were traveling quite a bit. We were going to Electronic Music Festival before it became what it is today.
Yeah, we did the electronic music festival scene for a couple of years in Miami before it's now 150,000. This is David. More than now, there's 150,000 people going. It was only about 60,000 when we went.
Ibiza,
so
Europe.
You had your habits. You became a couple. Was one of you worse at this than the other, or were you equally adept at building your level of debt?
This is John. I'll challenge David to answer that question correctly.
Well, I do the numbers, and he had twice as much debt than I had when we finally confessed.
A spade a spade. And you knew this before you decided you were going to cohabitate?
No.
That was the problem.
That's the right advice.
Okay. So then what was the moment in which, David, you realized that John had the debt level that he had?
So John and I went to the mountains of Colorado to visit a friend of his for the weekend, and we fell in love in the town that we were in, decided that this is a perfect place to build a modern vacation home. On our way home, we're driving down the highway at 75, maybe 80 miles an hour. Neither of us could bail on the conversation. And we started talking about how we could afford to buy land and build this beautiful vacation home that we wanted. And as we drove down the mountain, it went from buying land and building a vacation home to buying a condo that was already there to doing long-term rentals to pulling up in front of our house, opening up the door and confessing to, we opened up the door, walked down a flight of stairs, and John and I were living in a basement apartment that we were renting from another gay man who was a friend of ours. So that's when we said, we are financially and figuratively living in a hole. Physically, right. We are below ground, and our finances are way below ground.
And we do not want to stay here. So you had this insight. It was akin to a bolt of lightning, it sounds like. And so you then worked on digging yourself out of that hole. Where did you go to? Was there a guru? Was there a book? What began this journey for you in terms of developing your plan?
Well, I would say, first of all, we loathe Dave Ramsey just because of who he represents and want to encourage our community to stay away
from him. We don't loathe Dave Ramsey. We loathe his beliefs.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Exactly.
His approach can be polarizing. And for those of you who don't know David Ramsey, there is a, would it be fair to say, guys, there's a religious overtone to that that may not resonate with those of us
religious
who are in
very bro.
Yes.
Yeah. In the LGBTQ community, it doesn't necessarily translate.
Yeah. And, you know, the sad part about it was that when this happened, John, in 13 years in financial services. So we're out there telling everybody, save for retirement, do this, do that, do that. And we're not doing any of it ourselves. So the first thing I did was I was like, how the heck did we get here? And I sat down and I looked at every single transaction that we had down to the penny for a full 12-month period. And we went, holy, insert whatever Molly. Expletive you yes. want. And we're like, crap. You know, we didn't think we were living rock star lifestyles because I think everybody kind of gets kind of, you have that, what is the word? Hedonic
adaptation.
Right. You get used to the lifestyle you're living and you don't think you're living this great life. But on paper, we were spending a lot of money on things like going to Whole Foods every day for our groceries, buying nice wine, going out to happy hours that lasted for 3, 4, 6 hours and ended up being $200 or $500, right? It was just this kind of
designer clothes, nice cars.
Well, he was the designer clothes.
Fancy yes, food. Of course. Well, he
travel.
Sure. Now, was it cold turkey? Did you quit those habits cold turkey? Or was it a gradual weaning off of the things that were expensive?
That's a great question. That was our rock bottom when we finally admitted that we were in our mid-30s and we had that much debt. Despite all of the theoretical knowledge, we hit our rock bottom and we pretty much cut cold turkey, especially after we realized the categories that we were most egregious with in our spending, because we were depressed and down and out about it all. But we thought, well, the way that we're spending our money isn't really providing us the satisfaction that you would think it would provide. It wasn't providing us the happiness that it should, to some degree, satiate us, at least for more than just 1 week. And so by and large, we cut cold turkey. That's not to say that we were perfect and that we didn't make mistakes. And a little known fact is that after we paid off our $51,000 initially in 2.5 years or so, it wasn't, I think within the next year or so, we acquired $6,000 more in debt until we realized that we were gravitating back to old behaviors. But by and large, I think at that moment, we cut cold turkey, we changed our lifestyle, we figured out what was important to us and how we could adapt our lifestyles to what our actual goals were.
What is different for you as gay men that you would apply that you think is relevant for other gay men listening to this conversation? What has this community be different than anybody in any place trying to get a handle on their money?
I think that one of the things is that as a community, we kind of have a carpe diem kind of take on life. And we believe that it's kind of an after effect or a hangover effect of the HIV AIDS epidemic, where gay men especially, but other folks in the community were basically saying, I'm going to live it up. I'm going to have the best life I possibly can. And we were selling off life insurance policies. We were spending all of the money that we had, not planning for retirement. We're doing all of that, especially in the 90s. And I think we haven't gotten rid of that. And I think that's one of the things that's why John and I have our tagline of you can't live fabulously, not fabulously broke. Because they're more often than not, the fabulous life that we want is we're living up to somebody else's expectation of what fabulous is, not our own, right? I go busting into the door of the next big gala, dropping $3,000 on clothes so I can look great. And then I give $25 to the organization that I'm attending, right? We have a very outward appearance. And that was one of the big things that John and I had to fix is why were we doing the things that we were doing if they weren't actually helping us both financially and our mental health? Because our mental health was this constant chasing the dragon of trying to please the people that we were surrounding ourselves with.
It is rare that I get both people in the couple in an interview at the same time. So let me ask you this. Where were the areas of disagreement? Where did things get messy for you two? Okay, for those of you listening, it's radio, but I can see their video and I can see some laughter and a knowing smile. John, I'm going to begin with you. Your knowing smile seems to be more pronounced.
A little telling, huh? Well, I think the immediate, assessment was that because I brought more debt to the relationship, and that my expenses were larger because I was the one that put a down payment on a car, on a credit card. Size I was the one queen. That would come home every weekend with $300 to $500 worth of new designer clothing. I had all the furniture and all that stuff. I think the assumption was that I brought more debt and financial anxieties and stress to the table. David had brought less debt to the table, but he nickeled and dimed himself way to that debt. And he had his debt for significantly longer period of time than I did. So when you do the actual math of it all, the cost of that debt is relatively the same. Mine was just more fabulous.
Right.
I was the bagel and coffee, go out to lunch every single day. So, you know, I was dropping $30 a day on breakfast and lunch. Well, 5 days a week, that's $150 a week. $600 to $700 a month, I'm spending $8,000 a year on breakfast and lunch.
We're gonna wrap it up, but I have one last question before we go, and I'll ask this of you, David. You talk about something called the debt lasso method. We know about snowball, we know about avalanche. Let's expand the metaphor. And what is the lasso here?
Sure,
is it
sure.
like a reference to Brokeback Mountain? Is that what Jake Gyllenhaal here?
No,
yeah, but we do love ourselves cowboys, right?
Yeah. So it is actually as you mentioned, it's a 7-part system. It's actually 5, but the first two are broken down into 2 pieces. It's commitment to pay your debt off and not add any more. It's to get rid of low balance credit cards right away. Then the lasso piece is actually the one that makes this whole process faster. Reducing the interest rate to as low as you possibly can and to as few locations as we can. So get it down to 1 or 2 low balance transfer credit cards or 1 or 2 low interest loans. After that, it's automate as much as you can so you don't have to spend time. And then monitor it because you're going to have to tweak it from time to time.
Do you have a soundtrack for your money meetings? And does it include the ultimate songs in the Broadway musical canon? Can we say that?
I sing at every meeting, but David refuses to record it and publish it because he says I sound like nails on a chalkboard.
Oh, you should totally publish it. And I would nominate For Good from Wicked for your next money meeting. You will be weeping by the end with joy. If you do not agree with me, this conversation never occurred.
We're bad gays because we haven't seen Wicked.
Oh, for God's sake, you have so much work to do. Gentlemen, thank you for the insights you provide in an area that you do know well. We have some work to do on your theatrical training, but I'll get to that separate.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.
Yes,
it's great to meet you both. David Otten, John Schneider are the debt-free guys. They joined us from Philadelphia.
Hi, it's me, your debt. Look, we need to talk. This isn't working. The missed payments, the collection calls, and all those sleepless nights. We need nonprofit debt counseling, and I found the perfect place. Credit Canada Debt Solutions. They're non-judgmental, 100% confidential. They'll negotiate with creditors and even stop interest. Don't you want to rebuild your credit? You deserve better.
Break up with debt. Visit creditcanada.com.
Coming up later, everything you need to know about credit card baggage insurance. Natasha McMillan from ratehub.ca will be here. But first, Laura McKay from Policy Me has some tips on making life insurance more affordable. If you want to stay up to date on all things Moolala, we have this newsletter. This newsletter goes out once a month. It includes all the things that I've done on CBC and CityLine and BNN and whatever, wherever else. So go to moolala.ca. You can sign up for that newsletter and we will do nothing other than send you that newsletter with that email address.
You're listening to Moolah La, Money Made Simple with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
Life insurance. Life insurance is really, 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 really important. Really important. And if you have dependents, it's crucial. It's crucial, but it isn't cheap. So in this era of high prices and inflation and like making every penny count to make ends meet, how do you find the best possible coverage for the lowest possible price? Laura McKay is the COO of Policy Me, and she joins us now to share some tips. Hello there.
Hey, Bruce. Thanks for having me on the show today.
I know. It is different for every single individual and family, the cost of life insurance. But let's make some assumptions here. Let's say it's a 40-year-old couple. They make $100K in income a year total. They want to insure for a lump sum of $500,000 or something. How much, basically, would a term life insurance policy cost them in a year? And the reason why I want to start here is I want to put this, you know, it's obviously more than a streaming subscription and less than a car lease. So what would that be, exactly, ballpark?
Yeah, I would say the other thing that has a big impact on price can be your smoking status. So assuming you're a non-smoker.
Non-smokers.
Yeah, you're looking probably somewhere around the $30 a month each. So, you know, maybe as a couple, probably $700-ish a year is kind of what you'd be putting towards your life insurance costs.
Yeah, not nothing. So it's something that you want to pay attention to. The upside of the peace of mind and the financial benefit, if you have that coverage, is, you know, many, 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 many times over in terms of the benefit of that investment. But we're going to talk about, you know, the pros and cons of the cost and how to optimize that. Essentially, there's three ways you can protect yourself: whole life, mortgage insurance, term, mortgage insurance, obviously on a house. Can we take that off the table? It seems to me, having covered this for a long time, and I don't know if you have the same view as me, it's expensive and it's insuring a depreciating cost because you're gradually paying down your mortgage. Is there anything to be said for in favor of mortgage life insurance?
Yeah, not really. There's a few problems with mortgage life insurance. The biggest one, as you pointed out, is that it's really tied to your mortgage. So in most cases, the payout is going straight to your lender, not to your beneficiaries, like your family that would want to use that money as a full lump sum and decide how they want to kind of allocate those dollars after you pass. And the second, as you said, it depreciates. So as you pay off your mortgage life insurance cost stays the same, but your actual coverage is going down every year. But even more important than that, the underwriting process for mortgage insurance can be very, very simple, meaning that there might be like two or three questions. But the detriment to having that is that the cost is super inflated because the information that the insurer has on you is like very limited. So they can't offer you their best price if they don't put you through a simple underwriting process. And in the mortgage life insurance world, there isn't much of an underwriting process, and therefore they bake in a lot of risk margin into those products. Like it, in some cases, it can be two or three times the cost of term life insurance for the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. And even a kind of a non-depreciating coverage amount in the term life insurance world.
Whole life is another one that we mentioned. It's a whole other kettle of fish, given that there's an investment component. What would be your, and I know you have, I don't know if bias is the right word, you have a predisposition to not be jazzed about whole life. What are concerns for you? What does it raise for you in terms of it not being a fit for everybody?
Yeah, so the biggest difference between whole life and term is that whole life is a permanent policy, meaning it's going to cover you for your whole life, whether that be kind of just in those early years when you're in your 30s and your mortgage is at the highest and you have kids who are financially dependent on you. So it'll cover you in those years, which is similar to term, but it also covers you in the years where you are potentially retired, not necessarily needing that same like income replacement objective that you would be in those earlier years. And as a result, you're really overpaying for your coverage. So you're buying kind of a policy that survives you and is going to be there for your whole life, but you're overpaying for years where you don't really need life insurance.
Right.
So it comes with an investment component, which makes it a little more friendly in those earlier years where you're overpaying for life insurance. There's a bit of a kind of a piece of it where you can take a loan against that investment component to take some money out of your policy. But ultimately, there's a lot safer, kind of more flexible and more efficient ways to save your money outside of life insurance policies. And we always direct customers to those kind of channels.
And there will be many people who are big fans of whole life because it can be a part of your financial planning and that investment component can make sense for people. My predisposition is insurance is to protect against a calamity and keep the calamity protection and the investing distinct for simplicity and cost. So I'm just declaring that off the top here. So let's spend the rest of our time on term. There are a number of variables. They're kind of like levers and dials that drive cost up and cost down. What are those variables and what should we as consumers be most attuned to in addition to don't smoke, just don't smoke?
Yeah, so I would say the two biggest ones are going to be your coverage amount and term length. What you want to be sure about is that you're not like over covering yourself. Again, this is something that's in place in the worst case scenario, but I think the insurance company and you are in line that you don't actually want to make a claim on this policy, right?
No.
So you don't want to kind of protect against a lifestyle that's even more inflated than the current lifestyle that you're providing your family, because it's just coming at a cost to your current kind of bank account today. So it's important to assess how much you need. Make sure you don't get too aggressive here because it does get expensive if you go into those high dollar amounts, well over $1 million, for example.
How competitive are the insurance companies themselves? Because when we look at mortgages, some lenders will get tighter on the margins to offer a lower rate, but those mortgages are still based on things like credit score and cash flow and all those kinds of things. Are insurance companies, are there those who are just simply more competitive and they make less profit in order to have a price advantage?
Yeah, so certainly there is, I would encourage everyone to compare quotes when they're looking at life insurance. Largely, especially term life insurance, can feel pretty much like a commodity. So you're going to want to get something that's kind of very affordable for you. So I would always encourage someone to compare price. PolicyMe tends to be a small plug for PolicyMe, kind of 10 to 20% cheaper than the industry. We've been able to manage that by really cutting out a lot of costs from the underwriting and operations of life insurance companies. So we're completely tech enabled, and that's allowed us kind of to build from the ground up a totally new digital experience for the customer, but also a much more efficient operations. And we've been able to pass some of those savings back to consumers in the form of kind of a more affordable price. For other insurance companies, similarly, they may be taking bets on certain segments. So maybe some of them are just going to want to be the cheapest in the market for a certain term length or for a certain persona. It depends, and it can change who's kind of most affordable in the market. So always encourage people to definitely price shop when they're looking at this product.
How do you think about duration? So because we're looking at this through the lens of cost, is it cheaper to go for a longer term?
It's actually cheaper to go for shorter term. So yeah, 10 years would be cheaper than 30 years. And that's because if you're a 40-year-old, you'd be kind of losing your coverage at 50 versus at 70, right? And some of those later years are the most expensive to insure. And that's pretty kind of understandable by most people. There's a higher probability of you needing to claim in those later years, but you shouldn't be kind of associating the way you're purchasing this product with like you're covering those years that have the highest probability to claim. It's when your family is most needing that payout, which tends to be in our younger kind of years, in our 30s and 40s. So I'd always recommend that people look at kind of covering themselves till about 55 or 60. And then beyond that is going to be a personal decision based on how long you'll think you'll need that income protection.
There is a phrase that goes like this: you get what you pay for. And I went for cheap home insurance once years ago. I needed to claim. The process was a disaster, and I would never do that again. How does this work for life insurance, given that maybe the person who bought the policy isn't around to suffer the challenges of making a claim?
No, it's a fair comment. And I think a lot of people can look at auto and home insurance and try to make the same parallels to life insurance. But the truth is, the claims process for life insurance is a lot simpler. For the industry, you know, approves in the high 90s, in some cases like 99.x percentage of claims. The definitions that you need to meet around life insurance are very simple. You need to pass away, and it can't be suicide in the first 2 years of the policy. Beyond that, it's as long as you remain truthful in the application process and don't commit fraud in the ways of kind of not declaring some health diagnosis that you've recently gone through, you can be pretty confident, or your beneficiaries will be pretty confident that that claim will be paid.
Very helpful. Laura, thank you for joining us today.
Yes, I love being here. Thanks for having me.
Laura McKay, the COO of Policy Me. She was here to talk about life insurance and how you can get the best possible deal on that expense. Coming up next, how your credit card may be able to help you if your luggage is delayed. A lot of people are probably interested in this conversation, maybe after challenging travel experiences in recent months. Natasha McMillan from RateHub.ca will be here to tell us more on that. We're hanging out on the radio, but I also spend a lot of time hanging out on TV. I'm the money columnist for a show called CityLine. And if you want to check out some of the stuff we've been doing there, CityLine.tv is the URL. And on social, I am hanging around on Twitter at Bruce Celery, Bruce Celery Moolala on Facebook. Don't judge me, but I'm not on Instagram. I'm not that photogenic. I'm not on Instagram. Moolala is sponsored by Home Equity Bank, the provider of the CHIP reverse mortgage. Here's the big idea. It empowers Canadian homeowners age 55 plus to live retirement on their terms by providing them with a safe and easy way to access the equity built up in their home. And given the prices of houses these days, that equity can be considerable. The funds can be used for whatever the client wants or whatever the client needs. And that could be travel, it could be helping grandchildren, or it could be supplementing their day-to-day expenses. You can access up to 55% of your home's value with no monthly mortgage payments required. Go to CHIP, C-H-I-P, CHIP.ca to learn how you can stay in the home you love without having to move or downsize. That's Home Equity Bank.
You're listening to Moolah La, Money Made Simple with Bruce Celery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
People are traveling again. Oh, hooray for that. It's so great to be out in the world. Still, that experience in some ways has become a lot more stressful, in part because of the risk of your luggage being lost or delayed. That risk has increased dramatically. And you've heard all sorts of stories on the news about people's bags disappearing and being found in some crazy place. To relieve
people
some
are
of the
traveling
pain, if
again.
This were to happen
oh,
to you, credit card companies,
that.
Many of them
it's
offer
so great to be out
insurance
in the world.
Protection, baggage, lost baggage
still,
insurance, delayed baggage insurance.
In
so
some ways,
we're talking about
become
a lot more stressful.
I'm joined by Natasha McMillan,
in part because
the
of the risk of your luggage being lost or delayed.
Hello there.
That risk
I know
has
about
dramatically.
This policy.
You've heard
many
all sorts of stories on the news about
my
people's
luggage
bags
was delayed on being
found in some crazy place.
I was hiking in Patagonia.
Some of the
luggage, if not
to make it, and I had to go and replace a whole bunch of stuff.
Offer
tell
insurance
us
protection.
What baggage is lost baggage delayed baggage insurance?
We're going to talk about
how does it
policy.
Work on your credit card. I'm joined by
so
Natasha
delayed
McMillan.
Baggage insurance is a type of insurance that's included with
hello there.
Most credit cards.
I know about this policy because many years ago my luggage was delayed on route to Patagonia.
In the event that your checked bag doesn't arrive at your
did not
so
make
in your case,
it, and
Patagonia,
I had to go and replace
you can
a whole
be
bunch of stuff.
For some
tell us
or all
what
of the cost
is
of
delayed
items
luggage insurance,
in
and how does it work on your
of
credit
course,
card?
Of course, there are things
so
that
delayed
are deemed
baggage
covered
insurance
and not
is a type
covered.
Of insurance
so it's really kind of important
most
to look
credit
at
cards,
your terms and conditions
typically
for your
those
specific
that
credit
are
card,
premium travel
to see what
cards.
Can be covered.
So those with an annual fee.
What would be some examples?
In the event that your checked bag doesn't arrive at
your
destination, so in your case, Patagonia,
clothes, it's got
you
shoes,
can be reimbursed for some
book.
Or all of the
as you
cost
think about
of essential
the contents,
items, you need
what
to
is like, oh my gosh,
meantime.
For sure that's covered.
Of course,
and,
there are things that are deemed covered and not
so
covered.
So it's really important to know
so
that you
really
will
kind
only
of
get reimbursed
at your terms
for
and conditions
baggage
for specific
once
credit
you're going
card
on vacation.
To see what
so
can
if you're
be
returning
covered
home
under that
to your province or
what
territory,
would be some examples of things
losses
that
will not
wouldn't
be
covered. So you can
and then, it, of course,
luggage,
expenses incurred after 96 hours after your arrival at the final destination.
As you think
so you
about
have a short
the contents,
window to
what
kind
is like, oh my gosh,
identify
for sure
what's
that's covered and, some
and do those purchases before your
so
luggage
it's really
returned.
Important to know that you will
and
only
then
get reimbursed
money, security,
for delayed baggage,
cards,
documents
you're going
of
any
on
vacation.
That
so if you're returning
in your
home
baggage,
to your
will
not
be covered.
But typically, we recommend
losses
that you
will
don't
not be
covered those
in your luggage anyway.
And then, of course, expenses incurred.
So it's just kind of important to keep those key
documents on hand
at the final destination.
And you have a short window
from
to kind of
to basic
identify what's necessary.
It's interesting because I wonder if this has changed back in the day when I used it on return
and then things like
from vacation.
Money, securities,
all of my
credit cards,
winter stuff
documents
was lost.
Of
my
any
winter
nature
boots,
that
my all that stuff.
To be in
so
your baggage
I replaced
will not be
covered, and it was
covered. But typically
is
we recommend that you don't
is
put those
the coverage shrunk
in your
so much
anyways.
That it's only one way.
So it's just kind of important
I would think
to keep
that
those
probably,
key documents
they
on hand.
Changed and that might have
anything
been
that's deemed essential
system
from clothing
to
basic toiletries.
But from everything we've been seeing is that
it's because I wonder if this has changed back in the day when I used it on
vacation as opposed to returning home.
All of my
assume
winter stuff
got a
was lost.
Spare
my
winter
winter
coat.
Boots, my all that
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, I doubt,
so I
unlike in Canada,
it,
but maybe in other
right.
places.
Is that a difference?
Right.
Is,
what's
has the coverage
the
shrunk
coverage
so much that it's only one way?
But is it?
I would
know,
think
a
that probably they haven't changed.
Wow, triple gold, black, extra delicious card that goes up to a couple grand.
But from everything we've been seeing, is that it has probably kind of
500
once you're headed off on vacation,
and then you can see it go anywhere up to
like they assume everybody's got a spare winter coat.
I doubt, unlike in Canada,
but
it would
but
be
maybe
good, especially if you're traveling
right,
often
right.
with checked
What's
baggage
the,
to ensure that kind of you're
amount?
Picking
sure
and using the credit
but
card
is it,
with a higher
you know,
amount,
is there a, sort of a standard
just in case,
low end, and then a
your situation,
wow, triple gold, black,
Patagonia,
extra delicious card that goes up to a couple grand
for your
yeah,
clothing that you
would
need to reimburse
probably
that
about,
aren't cheap.
Does the flight have to be purchased
and then you can see it go anywhere up to
$1,000
absolutely. That is a very
important
factor,
but it would be good,
especially if you're traveling
need
often
to be paid
with checked
for
baggage
using
to ensure that kind of you're picking
your
and using the credit card
with the higher amount
in order to
just
be
in
covered.
Case
because if
some
your situation
points,
you were headed off to Patagonia
those are very
file
specific
the claim,
needs
if the ticket
for your
was
clothing that you would
part,
need to reimburse
or in full
aren't
using the travel
does
point.
The flight
so again,
have to be
always important
on
to kind of read those terms and conditions
yes
to understand if you are in this situation what will be covered under what circumstances
so your flight ticket will need to be
drawbacks
for
to this or any surprises
credit card
here
with your delayed baggage
it's
insurance,
always important to kind of
in
keep
order
in mind,
to be covered
some travel
how long your
baggage
will
allow
like,
you to file
the anticipated
claim,
delay
ensuring
if the
that you're
keeping
all
in
of those
part,
receipts
or in full
there are
the
some
travel
key things
to
so
kind
again,
of keep in mind
always
especially if you
want to
go
read those
credit
card conditions
or your airline
to understand if you are in this situation what will be
everything that we're hearing right now with regards to airlines
any drawbacks to this or any surprises here
it's always
so,
important to kind
given
of
the
keep
current
in
circumstances,
mind,
we recommend that people kind
how
of
long your baggage
file
is
their claims
like, through
the
anticipated
card
delay
in order
ensuring
to
that
get
you're keeping
compensation
faster. And
there
just
are
kind
some
of get
key
a
things to kind
of
keep in mind,
traveling.
Especially
back
if you want to
day
go
when I did
credit
it,
card
I called the
airline.
Card company as soon as it was clear my baggage
services.
Had been delayed. They opened the claim and I was able to ask very specific questions about what was covered covered and what wasn't. So I didn't go out and buy something outrageous that would
given
not
the current circumstances,
the,
we recommend
the insurance.
That people kind of
how does the claim process work? Is that the right first step, or was I just a genius?
I think that's absolutely the right first step. The last thing you would want is to make a big while they're traveling.
Back in the day when I did it, I called the card company as soon as it was clear my baggage had been delayed. They opened the claim and I was able to ask very specific questions about what was covered and what wasn't. So I didn't go out and buy something outrageous that would not fit the insurance. How does the claim process work? Is that the right first step, or was I just a genius?
If your luggage is delayed, I think that's absolutely the right first step. The last thing you would want is to make a big purchase. If it's longer than that, isn't going to be covered. But it's always good to double check.
A lot of them have a length of time. We're talking about delayed luggage. Sometimes it is lost entirely. Can you give us a sense for how that coverage works
with a credit card? Absolutely. So a loss of your luggage by a carrier, you submit any claims and again cap purchases and will not apply.
If your luggage
is
delayed by 24 hours,
for example, in this case, jewelry
is compensated
for
key electronics.
If it's longer than that, then
again, those
are
typically recommended to travel on you, but a very similar.
We're talking about delayed
kind of
luggage.
Process,
sometimes
again,
it is lost entirely.
Company,
can you give us a sense for
airline,
how that coverage
identify
works
what is covered
a, with
and
a credit
limit
card?
To see what
absolutely.
You can
so
get by
a loss
or what
of
you
your
might have to
luggage
purchase,
by a carrier
out of your own pocket is often
it sounds
again
like this would be a reason
not
to
apply to
book
all
your
items.
Flight
so for
on a
example in this
card,
case jewelry
because if you don't you're
not
going to have that benefit. Is that a motivator for people
again
as they
those are typically
cards
recommended
to card
travel
to
on you
with?
But a very
absolutely
similar
I think it's really
kind of claims process again
your
call your
big traveler
you travel your airline
a year
identify what is covered and the limit
part of your
to see what you can get by or what
you
might
have
to purchase
out of
flights
your
or even your hotel.
It sounds like this would be a reason
a great way
to
get the insurance
book your flight on a particular card because
rewards.
If you don't, you're not
going
to have that
going
benefit. Is that a motivator for people as they choose cards and they choose the card to transact
it's typically
with?
Not
absolutely.
Worth
I think it's really important
the
to keep in mind
that you
if
would.
You're
for
a
travel
a big
credit
traveler,
card
you travel more than once
so
a
it
year.
Always depends
always
on kind of the user
kind of
and how often
that
they see themselves
part of your
traveling
card
and ensure
year.
That you're purchasing
do you find
your
that
travel
people are,
flights or even your hotels
of this
through
as
that
a benefit
card.
Of these
it's a great
cards.
Way to get the insurance.
Absolutely. I
while
think there's
also
many cards
from
that,
some of the reward
and insurance products.
If you're only
as
going
these cards
once a year,
average
users
or maybe not
aware of. So and I'll give you
it's typically not worth
kind of paying the extra.
I want to say in the past 5 years
for a travel credit card.
I always used to
so it always depends on kind of the user and how often
they see themselves traveling in a given year.
On most credit cards,
do you find that people are unaware of this as a benefit of these cards?
If you do get in an accident.
Absolutely.
So it's just being aware that you're not
double paying
an insurance product
as part of these cards
that average users are unaware of.
Really important
to
be aware
of those insurance products for your card.
And
they do
vary
by years when I was traveling.
I always used to buy when getting a rental car.
Just go and reread the insurance coverage alongside
on most
your card. Natasha, thank you for your time.
Kind of the travel
thank
ones.
You so much.
Natasha
that
McMillan
is covered
the director
if you
of everyday
do get
banking
in an accident.
At RateHub.ca.
So it's just being aware that you're not
to talk
double
about
paying. And
baggage
sometimes
delay
it's always
insurance.
Nice to have an
extra
peace
be
of
sure
mind.
To read what coverage you have.
Really
it may,
important to be aware of those insurance
I don't know, be a
products
salve
for, your
for the pain
and they do vary
of dealing with
amount
a disruptive
or even what's
vacation.
Available.
That's it for our show today.
Well
a
just
thank you to our sponsors, Credit Canada,
the insurance
first and longest
card.
Standing
Natasha, thank
nonprofit
you for your time. Counseling agency
thank
in
you
the
so
country.
Much.
And to Home Equity Bank,
the director
provider of
banking
at RateHub.ca. If you want
to
stay up
to
date on
to
all
talk
things
about
baggage delay insurance,
moolala.ca,
what coverage you
subscribe
have,
to the podcast,
it may. On any know, be a salve for the pain.
If you have a personal finance question, if you want to send us
vacation.
A message about the show with your ideas, feedback, whatever it is, our email address is ask@moolala.ca. Thanks for listening and have a great day.